Okay, good morning. Today is Tuesday, August 22nd, 2008. My name is Allison Page. I'm with the UW-Madison Oral History Program. And this morning, I will be interviewing Mr. Bill Simpson with the U.S. Forest Products Lab. Mr. Simpson, if you maybe want to start off by telling us when and where you were born, a little bit about your education, and what interested you in forest products.
Okay, I was born in central New York in a small town named Phoenix. It's near Syracuse, New York. As I grew up, I was very close to the State University of New York College of Forestry in Syracuse. So I had interest in forestry, so it was kind of natural that I went there for my Bachelor of Science degree, which I received in 1960, and then I went into the Navy for 3 years, and when I was discharged in 1963, I decided to go back to the College of Forestry in Syracuse for my master's degree, so I did that, and then in the summer of 1965, I had a chance to come here to Madison to work for the summer at the Forest Products Laboratory, so I did that, and then I went back to Syracuse to finish up one more year of, to finish up my Master of Science degree and the coursework for my PhD, and then in the summer of 1966, I came to the lab as a full-time employee, and I was able to, as part of my regular job at the Forest Products Lab, I was able to work on the research for my PhD, which I then received in 1969. The first 3 years here at the laboratory, I worked in the adhesives research group, but my main interests were with wood drying and just the overall interaction of wood and water. So then I transferred to a group that included that subject matter, wood drying and other issues in wood moisture relationships. So I pretty much stayed in that general area through my career here at the laboratory, and then I retired in March of 2005.
Okay. Well, going back a little bit to your undergraduate career in New York, had you heard about the Forest Products Lab prior to that, and what were your initial impressions of the lab?
Well, I was not too greatly aware of the Forest Products Laboratory when I started my graduate work, but my major professor at Syracuse, Kristen Scar, who is well known in the field, and as a matter of fact just died not too many years ago at the age of 90 plus, still active in the field. Anyways, he was a good friend of a person who eventually became the director of the lab, Bob Youngs. So through my advisor, Chris, I was introduced to Bob Youngs and became aware of the laboratory, and I guess I got a decent recommendation from my major professor that that Bob Youngs actively recruited me. So initial impressions, that was a long time ago. I guess in general, they're favorable. I was, I was welcomed, and the people I worked with were very gracious and helpful to me. One of the things I appreciated right from the start was that I had a fair amount of freedom to, within certain constraints, to choose my own research projects. I wasn't just given a task to do and just without much input of my own, and that developed even more so throughout my career as I gained experience and supposedly performed fairly well. I was pretty much given freedom to choose my own research projects. And again, as I say, within the certain constraints, obviously, of the subject matter of the group that I worked with.
Mm-hmm. So you met Mr. Youngs before you became an employee here. What was he like?
Well, he was very friendly, and let's see, I think I met him during the school year of after I was spent the summer here in 1965, then went back to Syracuse, and he came to visit the laboratory, and you know, we talked to him, and he was very friendly, and made me feel good in terms of the fact that he made it clear that, you know, they were interested in me as an employee. So mm-hmm. That was my initial impression of him. I was aware of some of the research that he had done, and I had a great respect for that.
Mm-hmm. When you came here in 1965 for the summer work, what kind of activities did you do? What kind of research did you work with?
Yeah, that, again, that was a long time ago, and at that time I was working on my master of science degree, and so yes, during that summer I did the actual research project for my master's degree, which had to do with when wood absorbs moisture, it swells and can create very remarkably large pressures as it swells. As a matter of fact, the ancients used to split stones that way by wedging dry wood into a rock a rock, I guess you would say, and then putting water on it and forcing it to swell up, and then it would crack the rock. So anyways, that was the subject matter of my research project, which I had it pretty well planned out before I came. I knew what I wanted to do, and again, going back to initial impressions of the laboratory, that the people here were just very helpful in setting up the project, so mm-hmm. I could do it.
And who did you work with during that time period?
Okay, again, let's go back to initial impressions. There was a man here named Gilbert Comstock, and I can still remember the day I walked into the lab, but he came out and greeted me and was just friendly, very helpful, and so he kind of helped me along. And there was another person here named Bob Han, who was actually the group leader that I worked with. So those two people were, they became good friends, and a great deal of respect for them. And Gibb Comstock, that was the Gilbert was his name, but we called him Gibb. He went on to very good things. He was hired by Weyerhaeuser Company and rose quite high in their research department. It just was he was just totally respected throughout the whole field. And Bob Han, he went on to he was transferred to the Forest Service office in Washington, and then he became a station director, I guess, at the North Central Station, and also I think eventually out at the Pacific Northwest. So those were the two people that sort of took me under their wing when I came here, and they both went on to, you know, very very successful careers.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess moving along then, you started your actual work as a staff member here in 69, is
right.
That correct?
Mm-hmm. No, in 1966.
Oh, okay, 66. Do you have any, how did you find out about the position opening? I know you said that they showed interest in you early on. Were you solicited, or?
Well, again, going back to this school year between September 1965 and May or June of 1966, Bob Youngs, he made it quite clear that we want to hire you. So when it came the time there in the summer of 1966, they created a position, and I came to work here.
Mm-hmm.
Although the only, because of the bureaucracy of the Forest Service, they couldn't hire me in the area where I wanted to work. So they created a position for me in this wood adhesives research mm-hmm. group. So anyways, that's the reason I started in that particular research area. And then, as I say, several years later, I was able to transfer into the subject area more of my interest.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any strong memories or impressions when you started as a staff employee here? Any interesting people that you worked with during that first 3 years?
Right from the start, just green behind the ears, I was assigned a senior technician to work for me and do a lot of the legwork on the studies, and that's a strong impression, because at the time I didn't fully appreciate it, but as years wore on at the laboratory and we had less and less staff, I had less and less high quality technician help, so it was a good start as a technician that you could pretty much explain what you wanted to do and he could pick it up and take it from there without coming back and, you know, saying I can't do this or whatever. So that was a very good impression. And are you interested in negative impressions too?
Sure, whatever you want to share with us.
Well, throughout my whole career here, there have been certain project leaders, I'm not going to name any names, but various ones throughout the year, and one of the first ones that I had was like that, is they didn't do research, really. They just, I don't know whether they were incapable or they thought it was beneath their dignity to actually go and do some hands-on research or not, but it was a type of project leader that pretty much sat back in their office and did administrative and bureaucratic duties, and then the worst part of it was that some of them, very, very few, not many, but some of them insisted upon pretty much taking technical credit for anything that came out of the research people in their group. In other words, I mean, that would come down to putting their, having authorship on research papers where they hadn't done much of anything, and it was just very irritating to me. Fortunately, I didn't, I liked the first project leader I worked for, but no project leader ever pulled that on me where I did the work and he insisted upon having his name on it, but I observed that over the years. So.
Was that common throughout other departments?
No, I wouldn't say it was common. Okay. I mean, I can just think back of, you know, just maybe, I don't know, three or four people like that, but it was very, if I had worked for a person like that, it would have been very difficult for me to have stayed here.
Mm-hmm. Did you enjoy your first 3 years in the adhesives unit? I know it wasn't your field of interest that you had.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, I did. I didn't leave because of the person, the project leader. Like I say, I liked him. I just didn't think he did much in terms mm-hmm. of hands-on research. And I enjoyed the work. It wasn't that. It was just that my interests were more in a different area.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, again, going back to that summer of 1965, I worked here. The two people I worked with, Gib Comstock and Bob Hand, they were in this other group, and I just liked them, and I liked to interact with them. So that was another, between the subject matter and the personnel, I wanted to get into that other research group.
Mm-hmm. So after the adhesives unit, you moved into more of a drawing and A drawing group? Is that?
Yes, I can't remember the exact name. It was basically kind of two different subject matter areas. One was wood drying, and the other was just the general interaction of wood and water, particularly as it applied to housing. And at that time, both of those subject matters were in one research group. Later on, they broke them up into two different groups. One was strictly wood drying, and one was, I can't remember the name of it, but it had to do with moisture issues in housing. And I think Anton Tenwalde, who retired not too long ago, he headed up that unit, and I don't know whether it still exists in that name or not. But anyways, it's still actually that's the only one. There is no longer a drying research group that exists anymore, but the one related to housing is still going, as far as I know. Mm-hmm.
And you stayed in that unit then for the remainder of your career?
Yes, except there was a point in the mid or late 1980s that the drying group that existed as a group of its own was then sort of the work was shifted into another group, a larger group that included wood drying and several other groups. So it no longer had an existence as a research work unit of its own. But yes, I continued in that same general work, you know, for the rest of my career. Yeah.
Can you maybe describe what a typical day of work here was like? Is there such a thing?
Well, I can name some of the typical activities. I don't know whether they certainly all didn't necessarily occur in one day. One thing that all of us did here was answer inquiries from anyone. Could be anyone from the general public, just a hobbyist, you know, that, oh, I had a tree fall down in my yard. I wanted to do something with the wood and dry it or something. Just answer questions like that, all the way up to wood products industries that were, you know, having a larger scale technical problem and wanted some advice and suggestions. So there were typically those, and that was a kind of an evolution in how those things were handled. When I first came here, all inquiries came in by letter. Snail mail, and we answered them that way, and then it sort of reverted to telephone calls. And by the time when I first came here, almost every inquiry came in by letter, a few by telephone, but by the time long before I left here, we never got a snail mail letter inquiry. It was always email or telephone. Anyways, that's kind of beside the point. But and then as far as the research project, you know, it kind of, there were different phases of it. The first phase, of course, is you plan a research project. So you have to, you know, sit around and think about that and review literature and read and get your thoughts together and maybe talk to other people. And then the next phase is you actually do the research. And here there's kind of a fundamental difference in the way different researchers did research. And this goes back a little bit to the comments I made about certain types of project leaders, but even non-project leader researchers, there were some that would plan the study, detail out what had to be done, and then just hand that plan to the technicians and, you know, do it, and when you're done, give me the data. I didn't agree with that. I felt that I needed to get down in the laboratory and get my hands into it and actually do it and see it to appreciate it. So anyways, that was my type of involvement in a research project, as I worked with the technicians. I mean, I didn't go down there alone, but get my hands into it and actually do it. And then the next phase then would be when the project is done and you have the data, then you take it up and you to the office and you analyze it and work with it and try to understand what it means and then write the research report. So that's, I mean, you can't, I don't know whether that answers your question about a typical day, but those are that mix of things was the typical day.
Was hands-on research something that you strove for throughout your career?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So did, in that kind of capacity, you work pretty closely with the technicians that were?
Most of the time, yeah. Some studies more alone, some studies more with the technician. But it was that combination of me and the technician, yeah.
What was the relationship between the technicians and the scientists here? Was there ever friction, or was it very cooperative?
Well, I think it depends on the particular people. I mean, I certainly heard tales of and kind of observed obvious friction between certain technicians and certain researchers, but in other cases, I don't think there was any friction between the technicians I worked with. So I think, you know, there was some cases there was friction and others there wasn't. It just, I think, depended on the specific personalities. Mm-hmm.
Moving on a little bit, did the projects that you worked on or your job in general, did anything ever take you out of the office? Did you do any traveling? And if so, where did you go?
Yes, I had opportunity to do quite a bit of traveling. One type of traveling would, of course, be to go to professional meetings where, you know, you listen to other people describe their research and presented your own. So, you know, that went on throughout the career, you know, several times a year. And then starting in the late 1970s and through the mid-80s, there was a lot of interest in solar energy for drying lumber. So we got hooked up with several international agencies, the United Nations and the U.S. Agency for International Development. And so I got to go to Asia quite a few times to work on projects where we helped them build and test solar kilns. So I was able to travel to the Philippines, Sri Lanka, Burma, Thailand, and China. So that was probably one of the most fascinating parts of my career is, you know, being able to see these different societies and work with the people there. In graduate school at Syracuse, one of my very good friends there was a person from Thailand that was working on his PhD also. So I was able to hook up with him several times when I traveled to Thailand.
Do you have any memories that stand out in your mind about your travels abroad, and what was the reception of the international community regarding the forest products?
It was very, very good. I mean, we were highly respected, and sometimes I felt embarrassed with sort of the red carpet treatment that we received. I mean, I'll tell you what embarrassed me about it is because in several of these countries that I visited, whatever the institution was, I mean, the first thing, go up and see the head person. My host would take me to see whoever was in charge of the whole works there. And I mean, it was very, very gracious treatment. But then I look back at the people that come and visit our lab, they don't get to see the director unless they're some highly placed person. Anyways, my point is I think I received a much more gracious reception when I visited these countries than the typical foreign visitor gets when he comes mm-hmm. here, and that did kind of bother me. Mm-hmm.
Well, Were there a lot of visitors from the research community that came here for work? And did you work with any people from the international community?
Yes, I worked with several from Africa that came here. And Indonesia, China, several from China. And that was very interesting too. And Sri Lanka, there was a couple that came here. Yes, that was a good experience, you know, when those people came here and did a research project, and I sort of helped guide them along.
Well, kind of returning to your work here at the lab, is there one job or project in your career here that gave you the most satisfaction? Conversely, is there one that was particularly challenging or frustrating?
Well, I can think of a couple that were particularly good. One was this, the international work related to solar lumber drying. We helped help build a couple of solar kilns, one in Sri Lanka and one in Burma, and you know, to see those actually built and then working, that was gratifying. And I think the other thing was, more recently, there's been issues about invasive insects. There's one going on right now, the emerald ash borer. But before that, there were several others. The Asian longhorn beetle back in the late 90s and early 2000s. Anyways, I got into making analysis. One of the common ways to kill these insects is heat sterilization treatment. So I got into some work where, given all the variables that are involved and how long it takes to heat a piece of wood up to a certain temperature, developing some analysis to try to estimate that. There are the heat treatments specifications are usually that some particular configuration of wood has to be heated to a certain temperature in the center and then held for a certain length of time to kill the insect. Mm-hmm. So, given the wide range of configurations of wood, I mean, anywhere from a log to a board, or there's a lot of variables that determine the time it takes to heat that center to a certain temperature. So that was the analysis, is to try to use some heat transfer theory to develop ways to estimate these times. So that worked out pretty well, and there were people that used it, so that was definitely satisfying. Now, something that didn't work out too well, but oh yeah, there was one. Certain kinds of woods, certain species like the pines that grow in the south, which are very commercially very important for structural lumber to build houses with. Much of that is grown in plantations, and it grows very fast. And because it grows fast, there's a large proportion of any tree that's what they call juvenile wood. It has slightly different physical properties than slower growing, more mature wood. And one of the consequences of that is as it's dried, it distorts and twists and bends up into shapes that make it unusable. So I worked in several studies where, instead of drying the lumber in a dry kiln, which could take anywhere from one day to several days, depending on the kind of wood, a process where we dry it in a hot press. I wanted to get two advantages out of that. One was because of the heat transfer from the heat of the hot press to the wood. The wood could be dried in maybe just 2 hours as opposed to anywhere from 24 hours to 3 days. And the other thing was to hold it in place while it's drying so it can't distort. I did several studies on that, and the results were somewhat promising. I mean, obviously the very fast drying times were there, and there was definitely some improvement in the stability. In other words, less distortion during the drying. There were a few problems with it, some other problems, but all in all, it looked like it might have potential for someone to develop it further, but nothing really ever happened to it. I did have one company in California that was interested and was trying to do a little bit with it, but I know they got started, but I never heard whether they took it very far. So I was disappointed that it didn't develop into anything further. Mm-hmm. So, other than that, you know, things were pretty much on an even keel, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, kind of moving on to some of the social aspects of working at the lab. I know we touched a little bit on this. Are there any colleagues that you have strong memories of throughout your career? Any interesting characters that worked at the lab that you remember?
Yeah, well, I've mentioned two, Gib Comstock and Bob Hand. I wouldn't call them characters. I mean, they were, I just had a great deal of, I like them very much. We got along well. I have a great deal of respect and affection for them. If you want to get into characters, there was a researcher that I worked with and did a lot of co-op studies with, the solar drying. I worked with him on that, but he was a character, is a good way to put it, extremely intelligent, but unable or unwilling to carry through things. I mean, he would do a research study and gather the data, but to try to get him to write the report it was almost impossible. I supervised him for a while, and I just tearing my hair out trying to get him to, carry his research through to the final product, which, that's our job, is to, after we've done the work, is to put it into a coherent form so someone else can get some benefit out of it. But it was terrible to try to get him to do that. And I mean, it was frustrating because, like I say, he's a very, very intelligent person, but just couldn't carry through. I can't think of anyone else here now that stands out in either. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I can't think of anything more there.
I've heard a little bit about some of the activities provided by the lab for like social gatherings among staff members. Do you have memories of any of these activities, or were you a participant in any of them?
Some of them, not a great deal. I know early on here there was, and maybe still is, an FPL bowling league. I was in that for several years. That was probably about it, other than, occasionally there'd be groups that would go out to lunch or something together. And mm-hmm. But I guess I didn't participate greatly in the lab social activities. I guess I felt that, you know, I have had two lives here. I have my home life, and I guess I kind of like to keep that separate from my professional life. So I didn't participate in too many of the social activities.
Okay. Well, maybe moving on to talk a little bit about the U.S. Forest Service. How do you feel about having worked for or with an agency that's part of the U.S. Forest Service?
Well, one of the problems working here is for most of my career, I didn't really identify too much with working for the U.S. Forest Service, because we're kind of one tiny separate part of it. It's almost like we're not in the mainstream of the Forest Service. This is just my perception, maybe wrong, that we're the Forest Service connotes to me, the forest out in the woods, and the silviculture and watershed and wildlife, and that to me is the Forest Service. But here, of course, we're just working with the properties of wood, which it just seems to me kind of sort of a backwater area of the Forest Service. Although I think in more recent years, the lab has tried to integrate itself more into the rest of the Forest Service. In other words, strengthen our working relationship with the rest of the Forest Service. So I don't know a lot of the broader Forest Service issues. I know from one of the things that bothers me particularly, that's just my political orientation, is that I feel that the Forest Service leaders, they work for the administration and they have to do what the administration says, but sometimes I wonder if they don't prostitute themselves a little bit, and the boss says go out and cut down this forest when it's not environmentally maybe such a good thing to do, and they just get their marching orders and have to do what they're told, even though maybe deep down they know it's not the best policy in terms of the health of our forests. From a more personal standpoint, I visit Utah quite often. I like my wife and I like the desert and the forest there. And out there in the West, not just Utah, but much of the land is owned by the Forest Service and other federal agencies. So there's a much greater awareness of the citizenry out there of what's going on this public land. And we see the Forest Service, and even more so the Bureau of Land Management, just caving into special interests, like the people that have these all-terrain vehicles that just want to run roughshod over any land out there. They're very vocal, and they go to the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management and sound off and get their way, and the same with the oil and gas leasing. We just feel that that the public agencies are just caving into the special interest because our present administration wants things to go that way. So, well, better not get into too much politics here.
Well, kind of along those lines, were these impressions that you've always held about the Forest Service, or has it changed over time?
No, just in recent years. I just didn't have that level of awareness in my earlier years of what was going on.
How do you think the general public views the Forest Service and or the Forest Products Lab, for that matter?
Well, of the people that are aware that the Forest Products Laboratory even exists, I think we have a very high standing. After all, we pretty much created the database of wood properties and efficiencies in processing and use. So I think people that are aware of the Forest Products Laboratory have a very high opinion of it. And I don't know that people in the eastern part of the country have that much of awareness of the Forest Service. Like I say, in the western U.S., so much of the land is public and a lot of it national forest that the local people are aware of what's going on. And, some of them don't like what the Forest Service is doing, and maybe some of them do, but there is more awareness than I think easterners, where, there are some national forests in northern Wisconsin, and there's one in Pennsylvania and West Virginia, but there's much, much less land is Forest Service owned, so I just don't think the Forest Service is so much on the radar screen of the general citizenry of the East.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, maybe switching gears and talking a little bit about the end of your career here. I think you said earlier that you retired in March 2005?
Right.
Okay. And I guess, why did you decide to retire, and what have you been doing since?
Well, I had a big life change then. My first wife died about, it'll be close to 12 years ago now, so about 5 years ago, I had met a woman and we decided to get married. So I just thought it was time to move on to a different life before I got so old that all I could do was go home and sit in a chair. So,
mm-hmm.
And I'd been here quite a few years, so I had a good retirement. I just wanted to change my lifestyle. So. So I did, and one of the things that I've done since I retired is I've started working with turning wood items on a lathe. I don't know whether you're familiar with that or not. But I've always thought wood was a very beautiful material, and I spent most of my career on the sort of dry, scientific, technical aspect of it. So I thought I would want to get in more to the aesthetic nature of wood. So I bought a wood lathe and started turning bowls and vases and various other things that you can turn on a lathe. And I really like it. It's very enjoyable to start with a dirty, ugly chunk of log and open it up on a lathe and start to see the beautiful grain and figure and color of the wood, and then turn it into like a bowl or a vase. So I started doing that several years ago, and my wife and I just this summer started getting into craft fairs. So we've been to four or five already this year, and it was very gratifying to see that people actually buy some of the stuff I make. So anyways, that's sort of a shift in my working with wood into what is it, the left brain instead of the right brain, or vice versa.
Sounds great.
Yeah, it's fun.
And do you still maintain any relationships with people or past colleagues here at the lab?
Yes, I have in the last year. The first couple years I retired, you know, I just wanted to get away and start something different. But yeah, in the past year I've been working with a couple people here on a research project. You know, I've come in and helped them plan it and do it. So, and I really enjoy that. And I don't know how much more I'll do in the future. Maybe some. I don't want to do very much, but I like to keep contact here, keep my hand in a little bit.
Do you feel that your work here has left a mark on the Forest Products Lab, the U.S. Forest Service, or the USDA, even beyond that?
Well, I hope so. The work on heat sterilization, I think that if I left any mark, that might have been the best one. And, you know, we helped develop some of the solar dry kill technology. And as I say, some of the things that a person does may not even be picked up on for many years. Like, for example, that press drying work, I don't know whether maybe someone in the future will pick up on that and try to carry it a little further. So, you know, you never know for sure what mark you might make on some things.
Do you feel that you've accomplished everything that you set out in terms of your career?
Yeah, I think so. That was, I think, one of the reasons that led me to retirement. I thought, you know, I've done a lot of the things I wanted to try. There was one study that I wanted to do, but before I retired, but required the shops here to build a piece of equipment, and you know, it just didn't get done, and I finally gave up on it and couldn't wait any longer and retired. Although one of the people that I've been, one of the two people I said I've done a little work with since I retired, they carried through the study and did finally finish it up. I think lumber drying research has been going on for many, many years, and you should never say that everything has been done that needs to be done, but you can sort of say, well, how much more drying research needs to be done that's been carried out for many, many years, and a lot of very good drying work has been done here at the laboratory before my time. And so, and I saw that reflected in the sort of demise of wood drying as a research group of its own. At one time, I think there were, what was there, four of us that were working in drying, and then as they retired, you know, they didn't replace them with that expertise. So, because, you know, frankly, there's, given the budgets that the laboratory has, I can understand that they, you know, there are so many other areas that they don't want to concentrate so many on a research area that where there is less and less that needs to be done. So, I think they hired one person in drying just about the time I left, so I think probably that the laboratory will pretty much go with just one person in drying. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's pretty much the end of my questions. Do you have any other stories, memories, or comments about your time here that you would like to record for posterity?
I can't think of anything too specific other than I can say that, you know, I had a very enjoyable and satisfying career here. I don't regret for a second having spent all the years I did here. It's all in all, it's a good place to work, far from perfect. I mean, everyone grumbles a little bit about where they work, but all in all, it's I found it a very good place to work, and I just hope it can hang on in these times of shrinking budgets and other priorities. So I guess I can't think of anything else.
Okay. Well, thank you.